The next case on our docket is case number 2015-976, Kinnear Road versus Joseph Testa. Mr. Hubbard?
Good morning, Your Honor. The commissioner's position in this case with respect to the environmental remediation statute at issue here, Revised Code Section 5709.87, is that it exempts the increase in the value of land from its pre-remediation value to its post-remediation value. And with respect to buildings and other improvements, if the buildings or improvements are in existence at the commencement of the remediation efforts, then the statute exempts the increase in the value from the pre-remediation value to its post-remediation value. So new construction that is built only after the commencement of the remediation efforts to the land is not exempt. And earlier this year, the Ohio General Assembly took the extraordinary step of passing and enacting a legislative amendment to this section, 2579.87, expressly providing that. Now, under the old statute, the ones at issue for this year, for the tax years at issue here, up until the 2018 tax year, in which case the new statute would take effect.
And how should the court construe that new statute? It's not retroactive, is it?
It's not retroactive, but it's clarificatory. And so we're saying that the General Assembly, and I say the extraordinary step, because normally the court waits to a decision of this court before they act to, you know, if they think that the court got it wrong. You know, they'll say, they'll enact a corrective remedial amendment to the statute, the tax statute, later. But here, the Board of Tax Appeals was wrong, and so the General Assembly took the step to correct it now, so it benefits this court. Now,
when you say that the BTA got it wrong, couldn't you just look at the new change in the statute and say that the General Assembly got it wrong and now they wanted to fix the wording to make it clear that that's what they intended?
Well, that's a very good point, Your Honor. Basically, to the extent that there's any ambiguity in the former statute, right? And so there's kind of a question, it's a close call. Well, because this is an exemption statute, it's a real property tax exemption statute, this court's case law says that exemption has to be strictly construed against the exemption claimant. Any doubt whatsoever has to be resolved in favor of the tax revenue authorities. Here, the local governments, the school districts in the city and the other local government authorities that use these revenues to fund their services.
Are you arguing there's an ambiguity here or that the statute is plain on its face?
Well, actually, Your Honor, we believe that the statute is plain on its face, that it's what I say. If we look at the language of the statute, it says the increase in the value of the land and of the improvements is subject to exemption. And we're talking about an increase from their value prior to remediation, certainly. And then we look at some time after that. And that time after that is post-remediation. So the increase in value would apply to a value of the land, of course, which is always in existence. And then those improvements to land, they come into existence and are in existence at the time that the commissioner issues his order. So basically, what we're talking about is the increase in the value. And what they argue is that by increase in value, it doesn't really mean increase in value. It means the full value of the improvement that's added later. If the General Assembly had intended that, they would have said the full value of any improvement that came into existence after the commencement of the remediation efforts. They didn't do that.
I think what they would be arguing is that the improvements, because they weren't in existence, had a zero value, so that there was an increase in value once they were
That's built. What they're arguing, but that actually is not a correct use of the word increase. What you're saying there is you don't increase something. To be sure, there can be an improvement to real property that has a zero value. It's worthless. In other words, let's say it was there was environmental problems with it, and the environmental cleanup costs, the liabilities associated with it were greater than its value. So it had a zero value. But property that doesn't have any existence for the prior tax year, which is what we have here. There was no, to say it had a zero value is incorrect. It had no value. I mean, in the sense of it didn't exist. In other words, if you looked on the real property tax card, there would be no listing for an improvement. So you can't say there's a zero value to that improvement. But even more fundamentally, if you look at their argument, what they're arguing is that they get the value, the full value, not an increase in value, the full value of any newly constructed improvement, provided that it came into existence on or before the commissioner's issuance of his order. Okay, so, but we know that can't be right because the code section division C of the statute then says the phrase as indicated on the current tax list. And the current tax list for the year in which the commissioner issues his order is the value on January 1st, and that value doesn't include the value of any improvements thereafter. And we know their position is fundamentally impossible. And the Ohio Supreme Court, this court in the Columbus City School Board of Education case, expressly rejected their argument in paragraph 34. So they're actually trying to contravene the plain meaning of the statute. And certainly, yes, to be sure, could the statute have been issued, have written more clearly? Yes. Absolutely. It's not a very well-written statute, but it's sufficient to get the job done. And certainly, even if it's not crystal clear that we're right, it's clear they're wrong. And any ambiguity has to resolve in our favor. And there are other supporting bases for this. At the same time that the General Assembly enacted 5709.87, they also, in the same legislation, enacted 5709.88. And that statute says it's for new construction on remediated property. But unlike the section 0.87 exemption, the 5709.88 exemption requires local government input and approval. In other words, the local government, municipal legislative authority, or county legislative authority has to agree to it, sign off on it. And if they don't get any exemption whatsoever. And in fact, the exemption in 5709.88 that was enacted at the same time as the environmental remediation statute at issue here is only one of many exemptions where the General Assembly has provided an exemption for newly constructed real property. And every case where the General Assembly has done that in the history of real property tax exemption, they've always required local government input and approval and consent before that exemption can apply to any $1. And we would refer you to several other statutes in the revised code, including many in Chapter 5709. There's 5709.62 and 63, which is the so-called enterprise zone agreement. What it provides is that a city or county can designate an area as an enterprise zone. And then property within that enterprise zone may qualify, newly constructed property in the enterprise zone may qualify for real property tax exemption, but only if the municipal or county legislative authority agrees to it and they have their input ahead of time.
So your argument on 5709.88, are you arguing that we should be construing that in paramateria with 87? Or because I was kind of confused about your argument in your brief. You sort of suggested that, you know, the statute should be strictly construed against the exemption, and then you threw out this 8.8 argument, and then you seem to kind of backtrack on that and say, well, you don't need to apply it because the statute is unambiguous. Clarify what you're getting at there.
Well, actually, Your Honor, certainly, you know, anybody argues that the statute is clear and unambiguous. You know, frankly, the legislature made it.
It can't be both.
Yeah, the legislature made it crystal clear. Okay, so we didn't have the benefit of that new statute. But basically what the General Assembly has done is made it very, very clear. But what we're saying is to the extent there is an ambiguity, then it's appropriate for this court to look to not perimateria so much as this is the specific statute, 0.88, with respect to newly constructed improvements to remediated land. And what we're also saying is that in every instance where there's newly constructed improvements to real property, the General Assembly always requires that the local governments agree to it and sign off on the exemption. And if they don't, then there's no exemption. So if we, this would be unprecedented for the General Assembly have to have allowed this particular situation with newly constructed property to, if they had truly intended that, it would drive a hole, not a truck through this exemption, the entire property base could be jammed through this loophole.
They would be arguing that there's a reason for allowing this exemption here because it encourages the development or redevelopment of land, cleanup of brownfields, and that if you really want companies and corporations to take this on, the more tax incentive you give them, the more chances of
that
happening.
Well, that's true. Yeah, everybody wants an exemption for everything all the time. But what we're saying is they did the right thing by remediating, and they're getting the value that it is attributed to that in 0.87. That is, they're getting the full increase in the value, whether it's by reason of the remediation or because of general appreciation, they're getting all that already for 10 years. That's a very generous exemption already. And again, any doubt, because these exemptions are in derogation of the rights of all other taxpayers. Everybody else in those taxing districts has to pay more. Everybody has to pay more. So yes, does it encourage somebody to do brownfield remediation? Yes, that's what 8.7 is intended to do. 0.88, however, is when there's new construction. And there, it follows the general rule that it requires the local government's input and approval. And like I said, imagine you had a coal mine, square miles of remediated land, right? And then they build million-dollar apartment complexes over that entire property. Basically, that all those houses and all those people in those houses are receiving police and fire protection, the benefits of the schools, and all that would be exempt for 10 years. And there's absolutely no limitation to that under their view. But more fundamentally, again, I'll return to, if you take a look at their argument, they say they're entitled to the full value of the exemption, right, for any improvement that comes in existence on or before the date of the final determination of the commissioner. That is rejected explicitly by this court. And that's their argument.
I want you to touch on your property definition argument.
Sure. That
was in your brief. Specifically, can you tell me why it hasn't been waived?
Okay. With respect to the property, the whole argument is basically that they have to meet each and every part of the exemption. If you look at their notice of appeal to the board, did they assert that they met that definition? No.
Well, but so, this is your argument.
No. Okay. But before we filed our appeal, they had, remember, at the Board of Tax Appeals, in order to confer jurisdiction on the board, the taxpayer who was contesting the commissioner's final determination, here it's Kinnear, they had to explicitly set forth in their own notice of appeal the errors of the commissioner. And they made no contention that the commissioner erred by failing, you know, by making any finding or not
but
concerning.
The commission didn't base its determination on.
Yes, he did. Absolutely.
On the definition of property?
He basically, if
under the environmental
there's
statutes?
No requirement for the commissioner to have set forth all the requirements of the exemption. In other words, it's for the General Assembly to determine exemption, not for the commissioner. And actually, with respect to the definition of whether it's property or not, whether the property has to be remediated, that is a necessary element of the exemption that they had the burden of asserting and finding, and we can't waive that. We can't waive an express exemption. In other words, it's not a matter of our waiving it through a brief. We oftentimes don't even file briefs. So, you know, to say that we have to say it in a brief, that would fundamentally change the whole presentation of the board.
I was suggesting that you said it in the brief. What I was suggesting is you didn't present it to the BTA, and that's why it's waived here.
At the BTA, basically, we cited the statutes, and the statutes say what they have to say. Did we explicitly waive it? No. Did we make a specific comment about it? No, but I will say this. If you look at what actually was certified, it was just the description of the land. So the whole improvements thing, their brief didn't raise it either. Their brief made no reference whatsoever to whether the improvements had been remediated or not. So what you're saying is the commissioner has to state forth what the statute plainly says, and if he doesn't say that in the brief, then those exemption requirements aren't applicable. And by referencing the statute and saying they didn't comply with it, we embrace each and every requirement in the exemption. We didn't waive any aspect of it, and the taxpayer, frankly, in its own briefing, didn't touch the issues. So they're silent about whether they qualify for various requirements of the exemption. This court has said each and in order for the taxpayer to prevail, it has to show by clear and convincing evidence that each aspect of that exemption is satisfied. And so they didn't comment on it either. So on that point, neither side explicitly addressed that.
Okay. Your Thank time you. Has expired. Mr. Abus.
May it please the court, Alan Abus on behalf of the appellee. This court should affirm the unanimous decision of the Board of Tax Appeals based on the plain meaning of revised code 5709.87C1A. The statute has two discrete components that are the predicates for an exemption. The first one is to measure the increase in assessed value of, quote, land constituting property that's described in the EPA certification. If you look at 5709.87B, that's just a legal description. That is just a description of the boundaries of the land. And that's what's in the EPA certification. If you look at the EPA certification, it has two components. One is an address, and the other is attached for your information is a legal description. And that's all that's in there because that's all that's required under the statute. The second component is separated by a comma in the statute. And I know it's kind of funny to start parsing every comma, but the comma is important because it sets off the discrete component, which is the basis of this appeal here, which is that the commissioner has to award an exemption for the increased in assessed value of the improvements, building, fixtures, and structures situated on the land at the time the order is issued. That is a temporal component, and that's what the commissioner's order made a mistake, because the second component instructs the commissioner when to value that increase. It directs which tax list is the current tax list. So here, there's no dispute that the current tax list for when the order was issued on March 25th, 2013, was the January 1st, 2013 tax list. There's a stipulation of facts in the record before the BTA where the parties set out what the values were for the land and the improvements for the 2012 tax list, which is the year the remediation began, and then the 2013 tax list, which is the year that the order issued. And at that point, it's just a question of subtraction. The BTA was correct in looking at that stipulation and saying that the difference between 2012 and 2013 land value is approximately $396,000. And then the stipulation shows that the improvements, as you pointed out in your question to the appellant, the improvements were listed as zero in 2012.
But his argument is that's a misnomer, that there is no value, because how do you value something that doesn't exist? How do you respond to what he...
Right.
What he,
so they stipulated that the value was zero. So I don't know how they can now argue that that's a misnomer. If they thought it was a misnomer, they shouldn't have stipulated that the value was zero. The difference between zero and then the approximately $4 million in the improvements is what is actually listed on the tax list. In the Wilkins case that this court decided, that appellant referred to, they talk about the commissioner's duties being ministerial. And the way it's ministerial is that the commissioner does not have authority to find facts. The commissioner should not be looking at what's part of the remediation, what's not part of the remediation. The commissioner needs to do something very simple, and that's to look at the tax list that the auditor issues. And you look at it for when the remediation began, and then you look at it, as the statute plainly says, at the time the order is issued. The BTA essentially called the tax commissioner on its rewriting of the statute in its order. If you look at the tax commissioner's order, it does not quote the statute. It does not track the language of the statute. What it says is that the improvements have to have existed in 2012 and 2013. That's not in the statute, and that's not what it says. And the BTA rightly pointed out that the commissioner read out of the statute the phrase at the time the order is issued. And it would have no meaning if you didn't look at the tax list that was actually in effect at the time the order issued. And one of your questions pointed out the reason for that, which is that the whole purpose of the statute is to encourage development. So By remediating the land, yes, you're improving the value of the land, but where the rubber really meets the road is that you're now able to improve the land. So the improvements on the land are an appropriate subject for the exemption. The difference between Section 87 and Section 88 is that Section 88 specifically says that it only applies to land for which a certification order under Section 87 already applies. So you can read those two statutes consistently because, again, it's a matter of a different temporal component. You have remediation, you have improvements that go up, and then the Section 87 draws a very bright line and says, at the time the order's issued, you look at the tax list that's in effect. It's not what's in it, what was built between the issuance of the tax list and the issuance of the order. You just go back to the tax list. And on the January 1st, 2013 tax list, it specifically lists in excess of $4 million in improvements. So you read the statutes temporally. 87 applies all the way up to that bright line at the time the order is issued. And then whatever happens after that, you would go to 88 and you would have a different procedure for implementing what's appropriate for an exemption. So the statutes make sense when read together. The commissioner's order actually italicized its own insertion into the statute, requiring that the improvements were on the land in 2012 and 2013. And then it had a further, really gratuitous note at the end that says, we note further that the exemption only applies to improvements that were on the land in 2012. That's a statement of what the commissioner apparently wants the law to be, and it's a statement of what the law now is post-amendment. But it's not what the law said in 2013 at the time the order issued.
And what effect should we give now that there has been a change in the law?
Yeah, so the amendment was necessary because whatever the General Assembly intended and whatever the tax commissioner wanted, it's not what they wrote in the statute that applies here. So if you look at what the amendment did, you're right, it's not retroactive, so it doesn't apply retroactively to this particular situation. The statute now in the amendment strikes the language that we're arguing about today, which is at the time the order is issued, and it specifically replaces it with that component that the improvements at issue had to be in existence at the time the remediation began. So here, if the amendment had applied, you would go back to tax year 2012, and you would say, oh, it's zero, there's nothing on there, because the auditor's list doesn't actually show anything. But that's not what we have here. We don't have a crystal ball. It's not appropriate to read into the intentions in the absence of appropriate legislative history to say whether this was a clarifying amendment or this is really what the General Assembly meant and they didn't even want to wait for this court's decision. They were just going to jump the gun and rush and tell the court, hey, look, this is how you decide the case. That's not how it works. They changed the statute. They didn't make it retroactive. And it says something which is 180 degrees the opposite of what they said before. The statute's very simple to implement. You look at when the remediation began, you look at when the order's issued, you compare the two tax lists, you subtract. And that's exactly what the Board of Tax Appeals did unanimously in this instance. As to the Wilkins decision, the appellant argues that it squarely decides the issue here. It does not, or we would not be here. What the Wilkins decision did is it's really the only decision that meaningfully addresses the statute in any way that's relevant here, but it stopped short of a dispositive decision. So what it said is that when you're looking at the property on which the exemption is measured, you don't have to include only the property on which the remediation took place. So the Wilkins decision specifically said you can include property for which remediation took place and property for which remediation did not take place. That's perfectly consistent with what we're arguing here because the improvements at issue, the $4 million at issue, they were not specifically the subject of the remediation, even though they're contemplated in the covenant not to sue, that 76-page document that's in the supplement. So Wilkins is completely consistent with that. It says it doesn't matter if remediation took place on that property, it still counts. What happened in Wilkins is then if you look at paragraphs 27 to 32, the court parsed the statute in exactly the same way that I opened my argument, which is to look at the two components. Number one, It's the land constituting the property, which is the boundaries, the legal description. And then they've got four separate paragraphs where they talk about, and it's the improvements, buildings, structures, fixtures situated on the land. That's the same parsing of the statute that the Board of Tax Appeals adopted here.
I wanted you to address his argument regarding the definition of property in 374601M. As I understand, what he's arguing is that based on the definition of property that includes real property and improvements, your improvements aren't exempt because under that definition, they had to be subject to the voluntary cleanup action. I know you're arguing against that without talking about it,
and
but he's got a position that he didn't waive that argument, number one, and number two, that it defeats your statutory
right. And we made the argument for waiver in the brief, and we'll stand on that, but that's probably not the basis on which this case is going to be decided. Excuse me. If you look at 570987, it all incorporates the definition of property, but then it talks very specifically in that statute about in section B about what that property described in the certification has to be, and that property is a legal description. And if you even look at the form that the EPA uses for the certification, there's no room on there to describe improvements. It just talks about, here's the address of the property and attached for your information is a legal description. So if you look at the way that the commissioner then implements this, all he's doing is this ministerial role of saying, okay, here's the square that's the boundaries of the land. I need to look at the auditor's tax list for the appropriate year for that square, and I need to measure the difference in the land value. And then I need to look at the difference in how they valued the improvements. And the difference here is from $0 to $4 million. There's no basis under 570987, either B or C, to say that there has to be some specific inclusion of the improvements from the EPA, because that's what the auditor does. The reference in that statute to as described on the current tax list, which follows the language, improvements, structures, building fixtures, tells you that you look at the tax list and you see what's on there for improvements. That's where the commissioner gets the information to perform that simple subtraction to decide how much the exemption is worth. And that is all I have, unless you have any further questions.
I do not.
Thank you.
Mr. Hubbard, you went over your time, but I'll give you about 30 seconds to sum
okay.
up.
Okay, basically, Your Honor, what we're making the point on the, as indicated on the current tax list, what we're saying is, their argument that the boards, you know, correctly nailed it when they said that the statute, the commissioner doesn't give any meaning to the words at the time of the final determination. No, what we're saying is that phrase monitors the increase in the value of the property that's in existence then. Because if that property has already been raised or whatever, it's not in existence at that time. Land always exists. Improvements, on the other hand, like buildings, come in and out of existence. So that, at the time of the final determination, relates to the increase in value. In other words, the property, in order to be exempt as a building, had to have been in existence as of the commissioner's final determination, because if it had gone out of existence before, during that tax year, but prior to the commissioner's issuance of the final determination, obviously there wouldn't be any exemption with respect to that. Now, the point really, though, is that if they're right, then what about property that comes into existence after January 1st of the tax year, but before the commissioner issues his final determination? What the statute actually says is, it's the increase in value of the improvement at the time of the commissioner's order as indicated on the current tax list. So property that comes into existence after January 1st of the year in which the commissioner issues his order isn't on the current tax list, because the property has to be on its January 1st. So their argument is absolutely incorrect. This sophisticated parsing that there's a temporal requirement, that is complete nonsense. That's not what the statute meant. And we know, now in their case, their property came into existence in 2012. So let's suppose that the apartments were constructed in January and February of 2013. There will be no current tax list for those. And it says it's the increase in value as indicated on the current tax list. That's what we're saying. And Adams Martin, the Columbus City School versus Wilkins case, he calls it Wilkins, we call it Columbus City School Board of Education. That was the Adams Mark Hotel, which you may be familiar with, and it was asbestos removal. And the property there, the building, the Adams Mark, has been around forever. So it was clearly in existence when the remediation effort started. In fact, it was the subject of the remediation.
But wasn't the exemption allowed in that case? That
was it was, but because the property was in existence. In fact, if you go to look at the subsequent history after the after the Supreme Court case, the valuation case included this, and everybody conceded that it was only the part of the Adams Mark Hotel that was in existence as of the start of remediation. Okay. And there was, everybody understood that. So their argument, I mean, clearly in that case, the taxpayer had every reason to argue for all the improvements for all time, even after the start of remediation. And everybody realized that the statute did in fact limit it to those improvements that were in existence at the start of the remediation. Thank you.
Mr. Hubbard. Case will be submitted.